When we talk about what a trailblazer is, it's usually associated with the words pathfinder, pioneer, or vanguard. So how about we add change agent to that? Welcome to Trailblazers Radio, a unique podcast platform that speaks about a myriad of subjects. We are not afraid of opening closed doors, and we always tell it like it is, period. We are accessible on various social media platforms such as YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. We're also accessible on various streaming audio platforms such as Spotify, Google Podcasts, and so much more. It is our mission to ensure that you are educated, entertained, and edified. And we thank you for tuning in to us. Hey, what's happening? Hey, how y'all doing? Happy Friday to y'all people, to y'all good people. Happy Friday to y'all good people. Welcome to Trailblazer Radio. More specifically, welcome to the Author's Alley. This is the show where we talk, where we interview authors of all genres. And when I say all genres, I mean all genres. And we talk about not only the books that they write, but also the reason and the purpose behind the books that they write. And we really just have a great, organic, fun conversation. I'm your host, Mr. Frederick Beattie. First of all, thank you guys for tuning in tonight. I am very appreciative of what you guys tuning in tonight. The Author's Alley is back, y'all. So just for those who thought it wasn't going to be back, it's back. We're gonna do a lot more good things with this particular podcast, and yeah. So first and foremost, man, I thank y'all so very much for being here, man. Just continue to like us on all our various social media platforms. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we are on LinkedIn, we also have a YouTube channel, a growing YouTube channel, should I say. Do me a favor, if you go to our YouTube channel, if you like what you see on our channel, if any of our content resonates with you in any particular way, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, and also hit that bell notification so you'll be notified of all content Trailblazers Radio related. Most importantly, we thank all our listeners and all our viewers who either watch us on Facebook Live or watch us on YouTube or listen to our podcast on various audio streaming platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, so much more. So we thank you guys for always tuning in, always hanging out with us, always rocking out with us. We most definitely appreciate that. So thank you guys so very much. Now, without any further ado, let me introduce the author of the hour right now. And I'm gonna do my very best to give this lady the best introduction that I can. So first and foremost, she has been a guest on our platform before. And we talked about her one of her books, An Enemy Like Me. But let me give you a little bit more of an extended thing about this young lady right here. She's an Air Force brat. She graduated from USC Greensboro, and she really started writing small business content and published 5 nonfiction self-help books. However, she published her debut novel, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, debuted in 2022. This book won 12 awards, including finalists in the 2023 Feathered Quill Book Awards for Women's Fiction, first place in the Sepierre Award for Historical Fiction, and the 2022 Bookshelf Award winner. Now, her second novel, which published in 2023, An Enemy Like Me, which we talked about, winning 17 awards, including a finalist in the Hemingway CIBAs, a finalist for the NIEA in Military Fiction, first place Book Fest Awards Spring 2023 for Historical Fiction. And now we're going to talk about her latest novel, which is The Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. And we're going to talk about that, what inspired her to write this, what is it, what it's about, and we're also going to talk about some of the themes that this book touches on and how these are important for us as human beings. So without any further delay, let me introduce y'all to the author of the hour, Miss Terry Brown. Hey, Miss Terry, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. First and foremost, I want to thank you for calling me this young lady. Okay, so from this point on in the interview, you are golden, because this 60-year-old does not mind being called a young lady.
I love it. Young lady is who you are. Young lady is who you will be.
Thank you. So, like I said, I might have to hire you to remind me of that on a weekly basis. So.
That's good. I love that. So let's jump into this thing a little bit, man.
All right.
First and foremost, I do want to let's talk about, first of all, where did the inspiration come from for this latest novel?
Okay, so let's just do a real quick. Daughters of Green Mountain Gap is a story that follows three generations of healers. And they're in the 1890s, and they're the Appalachian Mountains of North Carolina. And so we see Maggie, who is the grandmother. She's a generational healer. This is her mother did it, her grandmother did it, you know, and it just goes down the line. And she does the very traditional roots and herbs and what I call a little bit of mountain magic. Her daughter, Carrie Ann, also feels called to heal, but she chooses to go and get an actual nursing degree and comes back to her community and tries to bring modern medicine to her community. And then there's the clash between the two. And then Carrie Ann has a daughter, and Carrie Ann's daughter kind of looks at both of them, and it's like, you know, both of you have good, but neither one of you are perfect because you both lose patience. And I don't know who I'm supposed to follow or what I'm supposed to do. And that's kind of like the setup of this story. Now, where I came up with the idea is crazy. Okay. Like, I had a wart. I had a wart on my thumb. And that's where it all started. And I had gone to my primary care doctor just for a regular checkup. And while I was in the office, I said, hey, anyway, we can just go ahead and get this wart off in the office. And she said, oh, no, I would have to send you to a specialist. And I'm thinking, what? For a wart? So, of course, I just went to the CVS, grabbed myself one of those patches, you know, and it was gone in a week. No big deal. So I was talking to my brother on the phone, and I was complaining about the fact that these primary care doctors pretty much do nothing in the office anymore. They'll take your temperature, and they'll take your blood pressure, and if you need anything, they send you to a specialist. And I said, I don't even know what they're for anymore. And then I proceeded to tell him about my wart. And he says to me, why didn't you get somebody to talk it off?
What?
That exactly. I said, what? He said, yeah, I got a friend that talks off warts. Well, yeah, okay. So I am the gullible person in my family. And I'm often told stories that I fall hook, line, and sinker for. And then for the next 16 Christmases, I have to hear about, you remember that time we told Terry, you know, and they all laugh and they think it's funny. So I didn't fall for it. I absolutely refused to fall for it. But when I got off the phone with him, I had to look it up. Like, I couldn't let it go. And I figured no one will know, right? I'll just look it up. I'll find out it's not true. And then I'll be satisfied. Guess what? There are people who talk off warts. They actually talk to a wart, and within a week, the wart's gone. So that led me to keep looking. Like, well, what else do people do? There are people that can blow in your mouth and get rid of thrush. There are midwife-type women who can talk to a breech baby and get the baby to flip in the womb.
Wow.
All of these really unusual, kind of magical medical things. And the more I read, the more it was leading me to what's called a granny woman or a healer in the mountains of North Carolina, in the Appalachian Mountains. And Maggie was born, and the story kind of took a life of its own. And that's where it came from. It all came because I had a wart.
Wow. So it came from the medical practice.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned that these are three generations of women who are healers.
Right.
And you mentioned that one of them started studying modern medicine and modern practices. What was the lead off to that part of it? Was it because of what you saw in modern medicine based upon that experience?
I think that for the story to work well, you know, you have to have, there has to be some conflict, right? And I'm thinking, okay, in the 1890s, medicine was changing. There were a lot of things that were being understood now. Germ theory, we finally understood germs, or were beginning to understand germs. We were on the crux of getting things that could take care of, you know, like blood transfusions. And I mean, we were only just a few decades away from a lot of big change that was going to change medicine. And Carrie Ann's father had died of cancer, and she blamed her mother. She felt like if her mother had gotten him to a real doctor, as opposed to doing her, you know, stupid, you know, roots and herb medicine, that maybe her dad would still be with her. And so even though she wanted to be a healer, she felt like what she needed to do was the modern thing. You know, let's bring real medicine here. One of the reasons that I like that conflict is because I see it in everyday life right now. We have people who believe in modern medicine 100%. We have people who believe in, you know, putting essential oils on their feet, and that's going to take care of it. And the truth is that there is some good to some of these alternative medicines, and there is good in modern medicine. But just like Josie May, the youngest generation realizes, people die both ways. Modern doctors lose patients. Alternative doctors lose patients. There isn't a perfect way of healing, right? And I kind of liked to explore that idea. And then the idea too that we often throw what I call throw the baby out with the bathwater. We get something new, and everything that's old, we just throw away. We want nothing to do with it anymore. And then, you know, 20 years later, we go running back after the old because there was some good stuff in there that we got rid of. And I would love it if instead we could say, hey, here's this new thing, and here's the good from the old, here's the good from the new. Why don't we put those two together and just go with it? But that doesn't seem to be the way people are. We have this tendency to say, oh, well, here's something new and shiny, and I don't want that old thing anymore, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's... Man, So you did. You said it was set in like the now. This you said the like the
1890s. Oh, so wow. the late 1800s, right on the crux of, you know, penicillin and things that are going to really change how medicine works. So, and then we're talking about in the mountains of North Carolina at that time, which there weren't major roads that led there. The people in the mountains of North Carolina in the 1890s were probably living in a way about 100 years behind, say, people living in Boston, because they didn't have the education, they didn't have the roads, they didn't have the infrastructure, they didn't have that. They were poor rural farmers in a very harsh climate. So. Even today, there are sections in the Appalachian Mountains that are still relatively untouched by modern society. People who are still living in ways that would, you know, without houses and no running water, and that's still happening today.
Jeez, so we're talking about the 1890s. So this is almost. Did a turn almost near the turn of the 20th century.
Right.
So we're approaching the 20th century, but we're not quite there just yet.
Right. Right.
So, and then you also mentioned that the availability of hospitals and clinics and
there isn't
the proper medical care is very scarce in these areas.
Exactly.
What made you set this particular story in a rural area in what made you choose the Appalachian Mountains?
I think that because when, you know, as I was doing this research and came across the term granny woman, And a granny woman was this woman who not only knew herbs and roots, but there was a little bit of almost like witchcraft. Like, I hate to, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like a little bit of just, I can chant and something will happen, you know? And I just liked that because it was significantly different than maybe a more modern way of doing things. And so it was going to give a really good contrast between the two. Plus, I loved the term granny woman. And so that made being in the Appalachian Mountains really great. But the same kind of thing also happened in like New Orleans, you know, and wow, other places where there were these, they weren't called granny women. And I don't know what they're called in New Orleans, but that it's like a granny woman, but there's even a little more witchcraft to it. There's a lot of the voodoo and things that go into it. And there is a whole, like, there's just a lot of knowledge that these women have, but it's all mixed up with this magical aspect as well. And it's just very interesting to me. The more I read, the more dumbfounded I was as to, like, well, like, how do they do it and how does it work? And one of the things that I've thought about is, we know, for instance, that you can give people placebos for pain medicine, and if they don't know it's a placebo, they will say that their pain is less. Oh yeah, my pain, you know, I've been in an 8 and it's at a 4 now, and they've taken nothing, but they believe that they've taken something, and that belief somehow in our minds, and I can't explain it, makes the pain less. Well, I think granny women and other people that used this kind of little magical kind of thing, it's the same principle. If they believe that they can heal you and you believe that they can heal you, then your brain says, okay, we can be healed. And kind of, do you know what I'm saying? And yeah, whatever's bothering you kind of like just goes away, just the way the placebos and other things do. So it's just a very interesting concept to me.
Wow. I'm interested already because you mentioned the generational thing. Mm-hmm. So you have one generation of a woman that's the traditional healer.
Right.
And then your second generation of person is, is she like the middle way? Does she embrace both the traditional and the modern?
No, so Carrie Ann, her daughter, is like, if my mom believes it, it's wrong. So she's the one that has thrown all the old stuff under the bus. She absolutely refuses, nothing her mother does is right. She doesn't believe anything that her mother, if it isn't modern, if she didn't learn it in school, then it isn't real. And, you know, and so she's that way. It's her daughter who kind of looks and says, there's good in both of these methods.
She sees the middle path.
Yeah. Like, why are you two fighting against each other when you could actually be learning from each other? Maggie, the oldest generation, is actually more willing to learn the new stuff. But Carrie is absolutely unwilling to yield. She knows that it's her way or the highway. You know, I'm right, you're wrong, and everybody needs to follow me and you'll all be okay.
Very obstinate in that. But I like that, you know, you have this older generation of persons who embraces their old ways, but still wants to learn the new ways.
Right.
And then you have the middle one who is dead set
on new only.
New ways. And right, then you have the last one, the last generation, which is the daughter's daughter, who she embraces both of them. Why can't we use both of them?
Right. How can we use both of them? Like, she's constantly asking questions like, okay, how do you know, like, to her grandmother, how do you know which of these herbs to use? There's three different things that would help with this. How do you know which one to use? Which one would you use first and why? And then she goes and talks with her mother and says, you use this medicine and this medicine for the same thing that granny uses these three things for. Which do you pick and why? Is it possible that one of granny's medicines would do better? Like, she's the one that's really looking at trying to figure that out. The other thing that I haven't brought up yet is that Maggie actually befriends a Cherokee medicine man. And she learns a lot of her techniques from him. And the townspeople at first don't like this. You know, there's a lot of fear and racism against the Cherokee. And so we see a lot of this idea of, you know, Maggie at one point looks at the townspeople and said, if you don't want me to help you, I won't. I'll move someplace and go someplace where, you know, my medicine is wanted. And then they recognize they're going to be left alone.
I get it.
And you know,
well, you know, that's one of the things I looked at when I looked at the bio about that book. This is like the racism part of it is very, I think it would be, it's very, it would sound, it sounds like it's going to be very prevalent in this book because of this, you know, because of Maggie being taught by a Cherokee Indian medicine man. And that's frowned upon by the townspeople there.
Right. At that time, especially, you know, when you deal with small towns in the mountains of North Carolina, especially in that age, they were usually very religious. You know, they all went to the same church. They all had their belief, whatever their preacher was telling them was the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And they looked at the Cherokee as savages, as people who were less than. You know, who couldn't be, who were obviously not as smart, not as capable, you know, and that why would we want anything that they did instead of being able to embrace, you know, they've been living in this country on this land for thousands of years, and they know how to use what the land produces. Right. Ooh. And wow. Yeah, so it's, I just kind of set it up that way. I love a good story, but I also like to explore things that are difficult to talk about. You know, racism is a difficult thing to talk about.
It is.
Right? Like it's too easy for me to say something and you to find offense, or to you to say something and me to find offense. Because if you and I were talking about racism, it would probably be a black-white issue. You're black, I'm white. This could easily cause problems, right? I don't see it from your point of view. You don't see it from mine. Oh, we're all going to get, you know, uptight, right? But if we put it in a book and then we make it just slightly different, now we can talk about it.
Easily digestible.
Yes. And hopefully it makes people think a little bit. Like, so if they can say, oh, well, I would have never done that. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Of course the Cherokee were intelligent people. If they can say that, then maybe they'll start thinking about other places where maybe they do hold racism, and then they can pull that in as well and say, huh, I wonder if maybe I should, you know what I'm saying? It's just like on the edges of those things that are bothering our society today. And if you can be okay with this woman using Cherokee medicine, then why can't you be okay with name something that's current?
Right. I like that you have your finger on the pulse of that, because like you said a moment ago, those conversations
they're tough.
Are very difficult to have.
They
turn into knockdown, drag out fest. And
right. Well, and what happens is that, you know, everyone has wherever they are when they start this conversation, whatever their belief is. And then if someone is challenging it, you either have to be very open-minded and allow that challenge to, you don't have to change your mind, but you could listen. You could, but if you can't do that, what do? You dig your heels in. I am right. You know, this is the truth. And what people don't recognize is the truth is, it's very subjective in so many ways, because my truth is my truth. What I've lived is what I've lived. But it doesn't negate what you've lived.
Exactly.
You know, you and I have lived two very different lives. We've lived different lives for a variety of reasons. You're a man, I'm a woman. You're black, I'm white. I don't know what your age is, but you know,
51.
Okay, so you're younger than I am. So you you came. So there are things that maybe you haven't experienced that I have. There's you've been in you were in the service, right?
Yep.
Military. Navy. Okay, and yep. I've not been, right? So you and I have seen life from very different perspectives, and therefore we're going to come at any discussion differently because of life experiences. And instead of digging in our heels and saying, oh, he's wrong, why can't we say, huh, I have never seen it that way before from my perspective. Tell me a little bit more.
Exactly.
You know,
or better yet, even try to find commonalities between, commonalities between us, because right. The commonalities are what are going to bring us together.
Well, I actually did a TEDx talk that said that very same thing. If you look for things that are alike, that are similar, the things that are different don't matter as much.
Right.
Right. As soon as you and I connected about books, right? A lot of other things ceased to matter.
That's it.
Right? I don't know what your political affiliation is. I don't want to know. I don't know what... I mean, I don't. I don't know what your religious affiliation is. I don't need to know. None of those things matter. Yet, if we wanted to, we could let those tear us apart.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? But why do that? Why don't instead we focus on the fact that we both love a good book?
Oh, for sure. That, right? Now, that's
and
we can come together on that one.
Right. And why don't we focus on the fact, as you and I discussed a little earlier, that we both were the encyclopedia kids, right? And read the encyclopedia from front to back. Those are the kinds of things. And now that we have those shared experiences, if you were to tell me something that was very different than my understanding of life, I'm now more willing to listen to you because we're friends.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. And now I can hear you.
Yeah, but I think when we talk about the cultural differences, we're talking about from not just from you and I or from any that type of perspective. Now we're talking about from the point of where your book is.
Right.
Now we're talking the cultural differences from 1890s was way different,
right,
than the cultural differences that we experience now, because most of that stuff is. Most of the stuff that I think in the 1890s was way more overt than it is now.
That's true. That's true. But on the other hand, what is interesting is this book is set in the 1890s. But when you look at the issues this book talks about, they're the same issues that are going on today. They're done differently. Yep. But racism is still here. Family issues are still here. Fear of change is still here. Loss of traditions is still here, right? All of those things are still with us because we're human, and humans just keep repeating ourselves. I mean, it's what we do. We you know, we may learn and grow, but we still come around and do it again, and we just do it differently this time, you know. Those kinds of things. And so I love that about historical fiction is you can read a historical fiction and you can find parallels to today, because even though things have changed, they haven't changed all that much.
Nope.
You know, it's just kind of changed clothes. It didn't really change the problem, you know.
Right. The problem still persists.
Right. Right.
But I think one of the things I like that you mentioned, loss of traditions.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that keep us as people, I'm going to say this, as people, period, not just black, white, or whatever, not just.
Right. But humans, the human, as human.
But humans.
Right.
It's the traditions that we have. We have separately and the traditions that we have collectively.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
What happens to that? What happens to us as humans when we lose those traditions?
We lose our connections.
When those traditions are threatened.
We start losing our connections with each other. That's what happens. Because what did traditions do? They give us a common bond, right? If you know, so I'm going to, this will sound crazy, but let's go all the way to the Grinch that stole Christmas. And you see that little village and they all come together at Christmas time, right? And they stand right around the Christmas tree first thing in the morning and they sing. Yes. And this is what they do. And when Christmas disappears, what do? They come around where the Christmas tree should have been and they sing because the tradition brings them together. That's the thing, right? It holds them together like glue. When you don't have that, what would they have done? Let's say they didn't have that tradition and Grinch had come and taken all of their Christmas and they didn't have a way to gather together and to remember why they were really there. There would have been pandemonium. He would have gotten exactly what he wanted. They would have been screaming and crying and, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth, right? All of those things. But there wasn't, because instead they clung to their tradition, which was gather together and sing. That's exactly what traditions do for us. Yeah, it binds us together with other humans.
Yeah. I mean, when those traditions are, I think mostly when we lose traditions, I mean, and I look at this from, you know, my point of view or my perspective of like what my traditions were are still
right.
as a family unit. There are certain things that we did as a family. So Christmas Eve for us as a kid, that tradition was, you know, I got my mom and my dad. We would go over my paternal grandmother's house for Christmas Eve, and we would be with that side of the family. Christmas Day, we would go over to my maternal grandmother's house and be with that side of the family. That was our tradition.
Right.
For a long, long time. Up until I was a teenager. Now, all of a sudden, that tradition goes away. And a lot of the younger generation who were just below me and my brothers, because they participated in that tradition as younger children. Like 5 or 6 years old, that was something that they were used to being involved in,
right?
And now those younger kids that were up under me and my brothers are now older adults. And then we always talk about these things. Talk about these types of things, the things that we used to do when we were younger or when we were. We were a lot more when we didn't have to worry about the worries and the pressures of the world as kids, you know. But I think for me, I think when we lose those traditions or they're threatened, like you said earlier, it does take away from who we are. And also we lose that commonality that brings us together. But I also think that when we lose traditions, I believe that it takes away a lot. It takes away from the history of who we are.
Exactly. It does. Absolutely, it does. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of people who come to the United States and they hold on to their culture, and some people in the United States don't like it. Oh my gosh, why are they, you know, if they want to be in the United States, then they should act like, you know, they live in the United States. And it's like, can they not do both? Can they not be an American citizen and still treasure the traditions from their culture? Why can't they do that? What is the problem with that? Because it helps them remember their history, who they were, where they came from, what was given to them by grandparents and great grandparents and great great grandparents and those kinds of things. So, you know, I love the idea of bring your cultural traditions and be willing to make concessions. Like, okay, this is the way we used to do it in the old country, and now we're going to do something similar, but because we're here in the United States, we're going to change it up a little, and we're going to do it this way, and we're going to do it with neighbors and invite them and allow them to experience part of what we, you know, that kind of thing. I love the idea of being able to be who you are and still be open to the good of other people, to be able to say, hey, that's really cool. I'd love to learn more. How could I use the good that you've got and bring it into what I do and what I know and what I believe and what I value?
Funny thing about that is that when we talk about that, the thing you just mentioned, is like, because it, I guess this is how I see it. I'm of the same belief of you as you. Why can't you come here and still engage and enjoy the traditions that you had where you were, and then at the same time embrace some of our traditions? I don't see the issue.
Right. I don't see the issue. I think that's one of the things that we see in this book is Maggie goes and she, you know, participates in some ceremonial things with the Cherokee. And she doesn't believe the same things they believe. Their religions are different. Their cultures are different. And she could just say, no, I'm not interested. They don't believe what I believe. And instead she says, how can I take the good that I see here and hang it on me, what I know, what I believe? You know, how can I do that? And wouldn't the world be a wonderful place if we could do that? If we could meet someone and instead of saying, you are different from me, I want nothing to do with you. If I could say, wow, you know what? We're different, but I see these good things here and I would love to incorporate those in my life. I mean, what a difference the world would be if we had that ability.
It would be. And thinking about like this book that's out, that's currently going to be coming out now, is the traditions that you're mentioning with these three women, is one with the oldest one. She's holding on to those traditions as tightly as she can.
Right.
And then her daughter, the middle one,
has just thrown them out the door.
Throw them out the window. Just to shoot them like that. We're not doing that.
Right.
And then the youngest one, she's embracing both the old traditions, but also embracing the new stuff and try to meld them together.
Right.
And
why can't we take the best of what we see?
Exactly.
You know, and is it okay to take the best of what you see if some of that best is from another culture or from, why not? You know, when we talk about medicine, so many people talk about Eastern medicine and Western medicine, right? Why can't we blend that? Because there are a lot of Eastern medicine practices that are really fabulous. In fact, we're starting to do them now. Things like meditation and yoga and mindfulness and all of those things are far more Eastern medicine, and they're good for us.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that Western medicine is horrible. It's why can't we use both? Why can't we take a pill when we need to and meditate as well? Like, why can't we do that? Why can't we use modern medicine and also have someone do acupuncture? Like, is there a reason that we can't do both?
The funny thing that's aligned with traditions is that they kind of tend to issue like introduction of new ideas and new thought processes and new things to it. I think that's one of the downfalls of tradition. As good as they are by keeping us connected to each other, connected to our roots, our familiar roots, they tend to be rigid as far as not introducing new concepts, especially when it's something that could be life-changing or life-altering. At least that's how I look at it.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I live in a community, and the number of times that I hear this sentence, well, we've always done it this way. And I think, what do you mean you've always done it this way? If your whole, you go back and generations and generations have always done it this way, you still wouldn't be using the wheel. You know, at some point, people in your family changed, or you'd still be, you know, not having fire yet, right? And right. So, you know, this idea of it's just my way, whether you're embracing the new or the old, you're wrong. You need to be a little more open. You need to be able to say, okay, there's things that are different. And you know what? You don't even have to agree to listen.
Right.
You don't even have to agree, but to be able to say, that's interesting. Allows for a communication and a connection. And, you know, you don't even have to use it. Just listen to it. Just accept it that it's a different point of view. And wouldn't it, I just imagine what the world would be like if people could do that. If we could just listen to other points of view. Just listen. Nobody is threatening you. Just listen.
Nope. Nobody's pulling the bag over your head. No one's now beating you. No one's saying that you don't have that. If you're going to be punished if you don't listen to it.
No. And it's like, why can't you? I mean, you don't even have to believe it. Could you listen? Could you just listen and accept that's what that person believes? And move on. And in our world, I mean, all you have to do is get on social media and read the comments under a controversial post. And see that people are not able to just say, they believe something different than me and move on. They can't do it. It's like, oh my gosh, if they don't believe just like I believe, then it's a threat to me somehow.
That's the closed-mindedness of a lot of people. I mean, and people who are closed-minded usually see things, usually have tunnel vision. One of the phrases I like to always say is that, you know, they made up their mind a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that's the one phrase I always say. If someone says, well, we've always done this way, well, you made up your mind a long time ago.
There isn't. And there's very little you can do about it. Yet, on the other hand, I write my books in the hopes that maybe someone will be reading along and they'll see themselves just a little bit. And they'll say, I have a friend who read my book and she's a very open-minded person. And so it kind of makes me laugh. But she says, sometimes I tell myself, stop being a Carrie Ann. Stop being a Carrie Ann. You know, and it's just that idea of you don't have to dig in your heels.
Right.
It's okay to be open. It's okay to hear another idea, even if it isn't what you believe. It's okay. Right. It's good.
I love that. And then the other thing that you tackle is the fear of change.
Oh yeah. I think
fear of change is something that you'll probably agree with this. Fear of change is something that is something that is very much feared amongst us as human beings, because we don't like change. We don't like when things all of a sudden are altered.
If you look at it in you know, years and years ago, generations ago, change often meant that you might not be safe, right? Because you did things a certain way and that was keeping you safe. So change equaled not feeling safe anymore. So we developed this, you know, we got to keep doing it the way we always know because we're comfortable, we're safe, we don't have to worry here, right? They did this study, it was really cool, where they put electrodes on people and they know what areas of the brain light up for fear. And they were talking with a group of people about changing some rules at work, about how they were going to do certain things. And they're following the EEG patterns in these people's heads while they're talking about, and this is just changing the way we're going to do things here at work. And their fear centers were all lit up.
Wow.
Simply because the word change, we're going to change a few things. And all of those people now are all sitting there with their fear brain going, We're gonna change, right? Like they're falling apart. And it allowed these researchers to recognize that change and fear they're right together. So it makes sense. You know, if someone says you have to change, well, the first thing you do is say, no, you can't do that. We can't do that. Right?
Oh man. Or you rail against it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what are they trying to do?
Yeah. But I think
and I'm not saying all change is good. I'm just saying that as humans, we generally don't like change.
No.
We get comfortable in what we're doing and we want it to stay just like that.
Yeah, because we're in that sense of comfortability. You're like, well, I don't want this to change. I've been doing this for yay long, since I was knee high, since I was inch high private eye. I mean, why are we changing things now?
Right. I mean, I can tell you that, and I'm not, you know, I am the worst one to, I should be pointing a finger at myself. I don't like change. I don't like change. I hate, do you know how much I hate it when one of my apps updates and they move everything and now I can't find a thing? Okay. I went into my Food Lion the other day and they had renovated in my Food Lion and moved where they kept. This has been 6 months ago. I still can't find the mayonnaise on the first try and it makes me crazy, right? And I don't like change, but I recognize that I don't like it. And I'm willing to like take a step back and say, okay, just breathe through it. We can get through this. You know, it's not, but I mean, seriously, if you go into my Food Lion, you will hear a bunch of people my age and older still complaining about the fact that they cannot find certain things because they moved them around in the store. Yeah, and that's a simple change.
Yeah.
Right? That's something that shouldn't cause any problem. And yet it sent the whole community into a tither. You
know? Wow. I can't find a mayonnaise because y'all renovated this place.
Where are the pickles? You know,
I'm going to give this store a 1-star review because I can't find my mayonnaise.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you put your mayonnaise over next to the lettuce and the spinach. Why? Why is it there? You know, it doesn't make sense, but there it sits. Right. And so I think that it's that idea of people don't like things to change and I don't like things to change. Right. Nobody, anyone who says that they love change is either not telling the truth or they are wired significantly different than the general populace. Or maybe they've learned to, it's a learned skill and they've learned to accept change. But I don't think we do it naturally.
Well, I would think that if someone was in an environment that was an environment that was ever shifting and ever changing, I think they would be kind of because they've been exposed to that environment that's always shifting and changing. I would think that they would start to hardwire themselves to be.
And maybe that's true.
Expected of that.
Maybe that's true. And so they might dislike it more if things didn't change.
Right. You know,
that they might find that unsettling. Exactly. And why? Why would they find it unsettling? Because it's a change. They went from change, 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 change to not change, and that's a change for them, you know. Yep. So
exactly. And I think when we're talking about, you know, this book and their characters, I mean, when we talk about that, we talk about these three generations of women, you know, and we talk about fear of change. You know, I would think for the older generation, that fear of change is that everything's moving to modern, tied to modern things.
And it's going to make me useless. There's that fear of becoming obsolete. You know, I know how to do it this way and nobody's going to do it this way anymore. Then what? What am I going to be good for? You know? Right.
And then I think for the middle one, who's the modern medicine, she, I mean, it's going to be her way or the highway, but then again, I'm pretty sure that her fear is, what if things change again?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause she's not going to want that either.
Right. And then for the one that embraces both.
Right. She wants it the way she wants it. Right. You know?
And the one that embraces the both, her thing, I can imagine that her fear of the change would be, what if, and I can look at this in kind of two ways. What if one overwrites the other? Or what if both become not effective?
Right, right. What if there's a third way? What if I get wedded to these two and there's a third way? You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
These are interesting like things to tackle and look at from a book from that standpoint. Now, you know, when we talk about like the 1890s, we're talking about three generations of women who all embrace things a different way.
Right.
And then who probably have all experienced all three of those things that we mentioned at once, separate or even separately at any given time, at one period of time.
And then just to throw things a little more, these three women love one another. So they're trying to navigate all of this. this angst and this, you know, like Carrie Ann has complete disgust over the way her mother is doing medicine, and yet she loves her mother.
Wow.
And so now you're dealing with that as well. Like, how do you do that in a family? Because families aren't perfect.
No.
You know, you get together at Christmas. I don't know of too many families that can get together at Christmas where they're not worried about something. Like,
of course.
Like, you know, before you go in the door, everyone's mumbling, "We're not bringing up politics. No politics. We're not discussing." You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Because you don't want to start something. Right. And so how do you navigate families when you love one another, but you don't necessarily agree with one another? Like, how do you do that? And that's another thing that this book tackles is that idea of, you know, these three women love one another, but they don't see eye to eye.
Yeah. Like you said, that is the thing with pretty much all families, you know, just like you mentioned, you mentioned the perfect example of what would probably tear a family apart,
right?
Talking about politics,
or it could be religion, you right. know, especially if the majority of the family has always gone to a particular church and now someone has decided to leave it, or worse than leave it, go join something else, you know, and now you've got that tension going on. Or there's just so many things that people, you just, it's like, we're not going to talk about that.
Nope.
This is not going to be a topic, right? And then everyone kind of sits and, okay, we all love one another. Nobody bring up the sore topic. Don't talk about the elephant in the room, you know? Don't bring up that cousin John now went and joined, you know, a different faith. We can't talk about that today, you know? And so, yeah.
Brings about uneasy tension in a room.
Yeah. And once again, this isn't just an 1890s problem. That happens in today. I mean, I can guarantee all across the United States on Christmas Day or whenever it was celebrated by the family, there was some of those same tensions where people sit in the room together, they love one another, and yet their belief systems don't always align. And now they have to figure out what to do with that.
Right.
Can I still love you and disagree with you? And of course, the answer, in case anyone's wondering, the answer is yes. Yes, you can love someone and disagree with them. It's okay. It's allowed.
Yeah, it is. I think the red dot around that reticle would be like how to properly and safely deposit those emotions, those feelings, you know, without it being overly angsty or without it being excessively aggressive or even to the point to where it's like you're condemning that person because of what they're doing. You're adding condemnation on that person because of what they're doing or what they believe in or what they embrace.
Right. Can you just accept? Can you do it? And, you know, the answer once again is that's not an easy thing for humans to do.
Nope.
We like it when people are like us.
Yep.
That's what we like. And not only do we like it when people are like us, but we like it when people agree with us.
Unfortunately, society isn't built that way.
No. And so, you know, it's, I don't know. I really like literature because it does allow you to explore these kinds of things in a nice, safe way. Because you're reading the book by yourself. It's not like you're reading it out loud and you have to explain it to all the people around you. And you're reading it to yourself. And then you can think about these things and you don't even ever have to talk about it. But you can think about it and you can come to some conclusions in your head if you want to. You know, it's a nice, safe way to kind of look to get. To get yourself thinking in that direction.
Exactly. And literature has a way of getting people to kind of pause their thought processes for a moment.
Yep.
And look at things from the opposite end of the spectrum.
Especially if the author is good enough that their characters are inviting. I know when I read, I often take on the characters. Like I become them while I'm reading that book, you know, and I tend to feel what that character is feeling. And if you can do that, if you can get in a book that way, you get to experience some things that maybe you wouldn't experience otherwise, or wouldn't allow yourself to, you know, and it's done in a way where, oh, and now you can think about it. Oh, I'm reading a book right now that is, it's called Red Clay Running Waters. And it is about the Cherokee being kicked out of Georgia and, you know, back in the early 1800s. And it was, first of all, I didn't know the story. So I didn't know a lot of this history. And so I'm finding it to be very, it makes me kind of hate my ancestors a little bit. Like, wow, what were we thinking? Right. And then, but I'm also seeing things from the perspective of people who were here and what they wanted, and all they wanted was to be able to continue living together as a community.
Right.
Right. And they weren't being given that option. And yeah, it's just a very, I don't know. And I love it because I'm exploring things that are really kind of, it's an ugly part of our history, right? There's a lot of our history that's ugly. And I don't think erasing it is the right thing to do. I think we need to actually like read it and understand it and discuss it as ugly as it is, because that's the only way that you can come to some conclusions about, okay, well, we can't let that happen again. I mean, you can't change it. What happened. I can't do a thing about it.
You can learn from it.
You can learn from it, you know? And so I love getting into characters' minds that see the world significantly different than my experience has ever allowed me to see the world.
Right. I love that. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about this particular book, are there any specific lessons that you're trying to impart with the reader as they go through this journey of these three generations of women as they embark on their separate yet collective journeys? Is there any particular lesson that you're trying to impart for the reader to try to understand or try to at least get a glimpse of?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what we've been talking about and basically the idea that we don't have to, not everyone has to be on the same page and agree 100%. And that we can find good, I want to say, in everyone, even some of the worst people, maybe love their dog. I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Like there's good to be had. And let's embrace that. Let's find a way to just learn from one another, accept one another, and move forward together as a community of people, as opposed to putting ourselves into us and them groups. You know, I'm so tired of us and them, you know, and the thing is that if you us and them like that, you're eventually going to be in the wrong group somewhere. I mean, you know, you can't find, there is no one else out there. There's absolutely no one else in the world out there who believes every single thing you believe in the exact same way you believe it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we all have our differences. And if we keep separating out until we only have people who believe just like us, we're going to be alone.
Very much so.
You know?
Very much so. I think one of the things that I'm picking up on as we're talking about this, especially when we talk about how we're different, but also how we are alike, but also how people are who they are just because that's what they are. I'm picking up also a little bit of an adversarial type of thing going that could possibly, an adversarial dynamic that could possibly be going on with these three women. Not a heavy adversarial dynamic, but one that is probably not readily available, not readily made clear? Is that dynamic present?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially between Maggie and her daughter Carrie Ann, you know, they're the ones that are doing medicine so different. And I don't think it's Carrie Ann to her daughter as much as it's her daughter looking at her mother. You know, she's trying so hard to be the solution. You know, I'm doing things the right way. And if everyone would just stop and listen to me, we would all be fine, you know. But the thing is she isn't doing that because she's a horrible person. She's doing that because of things that happened to her in her past. And she's doing that because she's trying so desperately to control things that aren't controllable, but she's trying anyway. And don't we all do that?
Yes, we do.
I mean, you know, we're trying to control things that are completely out of our control. And yet we're sure that if we do just the right things and just the right steps, and if we would just do it this way, everything would turn out okay. And it's not the way the world works, you know. Ooh. And it just takes her a little bit longer to recognize, oh, you know, sometimes faith is the answer, or sometimes modern medicine isn't all it's cracked up to be. Sometimes people die. Sometimes there isn't a solution.
You know what I call those? I call those revelation moments.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, when you kind of, you know, or what people call them, come to Jesus moments, you know, where you just kind of like, oh, yeah. And, you know,
they work it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think for Carrie Ann, you know, she does see her mom kind of as an adversary, this person that she's got to get her to stop doing it her way. You know, and in the end of the book, as all books are wont to do, I mean, you know, we come to something that happens and it brings the women together and, you know, all the things that happen in books. But I think that's in life too. You know, things are going along and maybe they're not good. And finally you come to a crisis point and people pull together. I mean, we've seen it in our nation, you know, right. 9/11 happened, and for several years, our nation was very, very united.
Stalwart, right. I'll say.
And very, very united. And it's because something horrible happened. And we all then, you know, cling together, right? And then things like race and belief systems and which political party you were didn't matter. Because we were Americans and someone had attacked us. And now we're together, right? And right. That's also human nature. And then yep. The further and further that gets from the collective memory, the more and more now we start saying, oh, we're back to us and them. Back to us and them. You know?
I think after COVID, I think that kind of put through everything.
It did. It threw everything in another loop again. But yep. Unfortunately, though, with COVID, instead of coming together, people were left alone for so long.
Isolated.
That I don't know that the isolation did us a lot of good. I think it let people think too long about things that, yeah, I'm not sure that it was the best solution.
We would have been people too much how to stew over stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they didn't have anything else to do with their time. But yeah, I think that often when you have a calamity or something that is big that affects a large number of the community, people pull together. You see it when maybe a police officer is shot and now the whole community comes together. Or you exactly. see it when, you know, there's someone that everyone knows and loves in the community who gets cancer and everyone pulls together and does fundraisers. And you see that kind of thing. And I think that's, you know, and we see that in books. That's what happens in books. You know, there's always some big collective something that happens that then pulls everyone and helps wind the book up in the end, right? And it exactly. allows everyone to, you know,
have that quote unquote happy ending.
Yeah. And you know, it's a happy ending, but if you could continue on with the book, there's going to be more bumps because that's the way life is, you know?
Yeah. I call those types of things, you know, they're happy endings, but they're bittersweet because of course it resolves that the current issue, but there are more issues that's going to be further on down the line. If you decide, if you wanted to expound on it further, or if like our favorite books or our favorite series that we read, I'm a huge Tom Clancy fan. So some of the books that I've read, they have these, especially I think Red Storm Rising it was not necessarily a happy ending, but what happened on the other side of this stuff?
Right. It's interesting. I had someone say for Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, I wanted to know more about Josie when she grew up. You didn't tell me enough. I don't know. Did she marry? Did she have children? And I just smiled and said, you know, it didn't matter for my story. And do you want her to be married with children? And she was like, well, yeah. Well, good. Then for you, she's married with children. you get to do what you want with that part. Yeah. You know?
The one thing I like about books, it leaves us up. There's enough of the story to allow us to imagine the outcome of it once we get to the end of it.
Right. You know? I mean, I did that. So as a kid growing up, I loved Gone with the Wind. It was just, I think I loved the dresses and I loved Scarlett's character. And, you know, there in the very end where he leaves her, right? Like, and she's left crying on the stairs and then it's over. And it's like, what?
That's it.
They didn't get together. So in my mind, they've always gotten together again. She always goes after him. They finally realize that they love one another and they live happily ever after. I know that's not what the book said, but that's how Terry ends it.
In your mind, that's how it goes.
Yes, it has to, because otherwise otherwise it was a waste of several hours watching that movie.
Right. That's my thought process too. If I read something or watching something and it kind of ends like to what I would consider funny, like, wait a minute.
If everything doesn't wrap up nice and neat, I'm like, whoa.
Hold on.
But you know what I've said now that I'm a writer, what I've said is, oh, they're going to do another one of these. This didn't wrap up because they're going to do a series. I know what they're doing here.
Exactly. I know they're just trying to pull people back in. Okay,
they are.
Right, I see the plan. All right, I'm with that. Let's go. Because I have like that love-hate relationship with those types of books that have those endings like that.
Right.
I love it because now it's something else that's for me to look forward to. But then I don't like, but then I hate it because
you have to wait until it gets there.
Yeah. Or that it ends so abruptly that a lot of questions that you had while you're reading it, you don't feel satisfied.
Yeah.
Or a lot of the questions that you had while reading it, they don't get immediately. They're not immediately answered.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. So I had this question, but they didn't answer that question. And I had this question. They answered this question, but they kind of answered it half-heartedly.
In a way that didn't really wrap it up. Yeah. Like, what happened here? Yeah.
And then there'd be times where I look at it like, you know what? I give up.
Yeah.
Whatever the end it is, that's what the end it is. And I'll just leave it. I'll leave it at that. Not going to even sit up here and try to wrap my head around it or try to figure it out. If it's quote unquote happily ever after, then that's what it is. If it's not, I'm fine with that. But Miss Terry, I've enjoyed this time with you as always.
Thank you.
It's always been an interesting conversation because for one thing, for the first time we talked, when we talked about An Enemy Like Me, from what I've seen, this is kind of the theme that I see with the books that with what you're writing. You pick a subject and then you tackle certain theme. You tackle certain themes. Like with this book, you tackle racism, you tackle loss of tradition, you tackle fear of change, but you also kind of tap into the adversarial nature of mother
family
and daughter
relationships, right?
Yep.
Right.
And I like the way that how you're tackling those things, because it's something that we as human beings in 2024 still deal with.
Right.
We still have to deal with these things. There is an adversarial nature of family members, you know.
That you have to learn how to tackle.
Yep.
Because we love them, you know? Yep.
We do. Yeah. And we are people that are resist. We are people. We are a race that we are a race. And I mean, the human race that's right. resistant to change. We as a human race, we all have traditions that we've staunchly followed. And when those traditions are lost or they're threatened, we tend to kind of hunker down and circle the wagons.
Right.
So.
Right.
I love that you're mixing those things in it, because like it or not, you know, if for my viewers out there, like it or not, these issues that she's writing about in historical fiction are still very much prevalent to this day. And especially the fear of change and the adversarial nature of adversarial nature of family members, because until we understand what makes us the same, we'll never understand what makes us different.
Right. Right. Because differences are too scary to tackle. But like I said, if you can get to know someone first and they can become friends, they can become someone that you have commonalities with, then it's a little easier to start tackling the things that are different, to listen and to take, you know, what you have to say and say, oh, well, okay, you know, I've never experienced that. Here's what I've experienced, and just be able to listen to one another. Yeah.
Right. Gotta listen to each other.
Gotta listen, yeah.
So I'm going to give you this opportunity to let everybody know who you are, the books that you have out, including your current book, and where people can find you and find your book.
All right. You have the stage. All right. So I'm Terry M. Brown, and I began writing novels and got them. My first one published in 2022, and that was Sunflowers Beneath the Snow. It's about three generations of Ukrainian women, and it came out right before the current Ukrainian crisis. In fact, 2 weeks after my book came out, Russia invaded Ukraine. And so that's crazy. I have a friend who's Ukrainian. She told me a little tiny story that was so compelling that I tell everyone I wrote 82,000 words of fiction to tell those three pages of truth.
Wow.
And then An Enemy Like Me is it's a World War II genre, but one of the main characters is a first generation German American. His name is Jacob. And so Jacob's parents were born in Germany, moved to the United States, and Jacob was born in the United States. When World War II comes along and he decides he's going to fight in the war, he believes that he's going to fight the Japanese. And that's an enemy that he feels like he can get behind. And he ends up fighting in Germany and recognizes that he's more like the enemy than he is different from the enemy. We see that book from his point of view, but also his wife and his four-year-old son. And then finally, Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, which just came out in January. And that's what we've been discussing this whole time. You can find me at my website, which is my name, Terry M. Brown, and that's Terry with one R. While on my website, you can join my newsletter. You can find all my social media apps. Like all the little icons are there, so just pick one. And if you don't want to do any of that and you just want to reach out to me, I have a contact page and I would love to hear from you.
Cool beans. I love that. So I did put your website up there for everybody to take a look and see. I'm also going to post a book link so everybody can take a look at that.
Fantastic.
One of the things I want you guys to do, if you guys are watching and looking or listening to this, do me a favor and, you know, check out this book. I mean, even if you're not into historical fiction, I know I am, because I like reading it because of the significance of the stories, even though the characters are fictional, the historical backdrop and importance of the story is factual.
Yeah.
But most definitely take a look at these books. I mean, like we've been discussing, there are things that have happened that have transpired in the past, such as the setting of this book, this current book in the 1890s, that still happen to this day.
Yeah, I think that people have the opportunity to learn a lot about themselves and their neighbors and their friends and their family if they're willing to like get into the book and open up their hearts and their minds to those themes. So
most definitely, because I think I strongly believe if they do this, you don't even have to read the book necessarily to even see the things that go on in society today and compare them to what happened in society back, way further back in time.
There's a reason that they say history repeats itself.
Very much so.
Right.
Very much so. And you are so correct in that. And if we keep on repeating history, we're bound to failure.
Yeah. Yep.
That's one of the things I will always say, and I will keep repeating that. If we continue to repeat the bad parts of our history, and we don't learn the lessons from that history, we're gonna just keep on making the same mistakes over and over again with no lesson being learned and no real relevant change happening.
Right. I 100% agree. So,
but hey, you know, what do we know, right? We're just two like-minded people.
That see something
the same way.
Right. You know? Exactly.
And the one thing that before I leave you guys tonight, I want you guys to understand this. The things that me and Miss Brown, me and Miss Tim, I'm gonna call her this young lady because that's what she is. The things that me and this young lady have been talking about are nothing new up under the sun. We've had these discussions, we've had these particular issues ever since, geez, the beginning of time, perhaps.
Right. Right.
And one thing that I said, and we both agreed, is we have to find out what makes us alike first before we even think about what makes us different. Or we can do it vice versa. When we learn to look at and respect what makes us different, then we can find common ground or what makes us the same. However, I look at it from how I said it.
It's easier because people tend to group themselves by commonalities.
Right.
We're used to that. So, you know, like I tell people, look for what makes you the same as someone.
Right.
Because once you find those things, then those things that are different just don't matter as much. They just don't matter.
They really don't. Well spoken. Well spoken. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this episode of The Author's Alley on right here on Trailblazers Radio. But don't worry, we have other shows and other great content that we have. So this Saturday, Critical Conversations is coming back to you with my sister LHG, and she's got a great subject for you guys. Make sure that you tune in to Power Hour as well as Girl Chat Weekly on Mondays and Tuesdays. I think I'm gonna come with a show this coming Monday, because there's some things I want to talk about because I'm gonna piggyback off something that me, LHG, and some other people have talked about in previous episodes. And this is gonna be something that's very candid, and I'm also gonna be very transparent. The subject matter is gonna be, you know, the larger than life figure of my father and the values that he instilled upon us, but me as a son not while living up to those values and things of that nature. So it's going to be some things that's going to be really transparent, and I'm going to put all that out there on display for you guys. But until that time, I want you guys to have a very, very great and safe weekend. If you are off on Monday, which is President's Day, make sure you enjoy this 3-day weekend. But also, as I always do when I close out these shows, number one, y'all take care of each other. Number two, love on each other. And number three, it's a crazy world out here, y'all. So above all those things, please be safe out here, man. You guys drive safe. Make sure you arrive safe. Make sure that you guys are doing what you have to do to be safe out here. So we love y'all, and we appreciate y'all, and we thank y'all for tuning in. See y'all next one.